It's, I was supposed to say the date first. It's October 14th, 2011, and it's the Lullabot podcast. Live from the Do It With Drupal conference in Brooklyn, New York.
Woohoo!
And we've got a panel of Drupal experts up front here. We're going to reminisce a little bit about the conference and... take some questions.
We're
willing to take all questions from anyone in the audience. But first, maybe we can start by going through the panel and have everyone sort of introduce themselves. We'll start way down the end with Joe there.
I'm Joe Schindler, EOJ the Brave on Drupal.org. I work at Lullabot, do a lot of training, and like talking about Drupal.
I am Earl Miles, known as Merlin of Chaos. I wrote views, panels, C-tools, a bunch of other things, and I live... eat, sleep, breathe, Drupal.
C-Tools was the module that you called out that you've written?
Did I what?
You said I wrote C-Tools amongst other things?
Yeah.
All right, we'll talk more about that later.
I'm Greg Dunlap. I'm Hey Rocker on Drupal.org. I work at Node One in Stockholm, Sweden. I got suckered into running an initiative for Drupal 8. And that stuff.
My name is Jeff Eaton. I'm Eaton on Twitter, Drupal.org, many places around the internet. I have been working with Drupal for a longish time, and I'm a general rabble-rouser slash hand-waver in the Drupal community ranting about things. Bomb thrower, yes, things like that.
My name is Jason Pimentel. I'm from Providence, Rhode Island as well. I've been working with Drupal for a while. I'm Jay Pimentel on Drupal.org and Twitter. I do a lot more on the design and strategy side, so I tend to rant about fonts a lot more than necessarily code stuff.
I'm Sally Young. I'm a developer at Lullabot. I'm just a fish on Drupal.org, and I like to play with Amazon file systems.
Right on. I'm Jeff Robbins, JJeff on Twitter and Drupal.org and other places, and I'm with the Lullabot as well, I guess. So what do you all think of the Do It With Drupal conference? Anybody favorite highlight moments?
I really enjoyed Jonathan Stark's presentation. He did some really interesting stuff on transforms with CSS and how we can build applications for mobile, but using the tools we already have, such as HTML, CSS, and JavaScript.
So Jonathan wrote a book for O'Reilly called Building Mobile Applications with HTML5 and CSS3 and JavaScript, or some quick title that rolls off the tongue like that. But yeah, he talks about those technologies and how you can use those in building mobile apps, which... it's sort of, for a lot of us that have been sort of struggling with HTML5 or HTML for years and then starting to learn about HTML5 to realize that actually you're not that far off from being able to build a mobile app and actually, you know, start to be one of those cool kids like with your, you know, oh yeah, my app. I assume that's cooler because, I don't know. But he was talking about that.
Yeah, there's some interesting ways of building apps to work across all sorts of different platforms, because, of course, if we want to build an app, we don't want to spend loads and loads of time learning the intricacies of every single device that we want to display our information on. So that was really interesting. And it's also good to step outside of Drupal sometimes, because you can get your head really far in it. And it's good to see all sorts of other interesting things that are going on around the web. And, you know, it inspires you to go off and build exciting Drupal sites that can help you power those kind of things. So that was really interesting for me.
Yeah.
Well, I think looking at that stuff really sort of through the lens of being a Drupal person, you start to see where those interconnections are. I mean, the things that Jen Simmons was talking about in HTML5 APIs and Jonathan's presentation and all of the things about responsive design that have been coming about. There's really neat little crossovers between what you can do just with a responsive site and Drupal, and then add to that and sort of layer on some of these things with HTML5 APIs and local storage and just the cool things that you can start to do more and more now with the animations and transforms to really make things that are a much richer and more interesting experience.
Yeah, and I think we're getting to the point of, you know, looking at Drupal as how can we make our users' experience even more exciting, and what can we do with the platform that we use in order to help us do that.
Cool. I think we should add more icons. Just more icons. As
more icons?
And animated
They make
gifts.
Everything better. It's like sprinkling, you know. I actually, two of the sessions that I was able to catch that I really, really loved were, Greg Dunlap's session on building web services on Drupal. It was really cool. He actually put together an actual functioning website with its own web services and a Titanium app for iPhone and Android to demo the concept of building
We need to explain to people who weren't in that session what the website that he built was. So there's been an example module kicking around for a while. Perhaps if you've taken one of the Lullabot workshops a few years ago, we built a module called the Pants module, which tracked for each user on your site their pants status, whether pants on or pants off, and then you could share that with other people.
It's useful metadata that can be cached, extracted, monetized later.
Yeah, but. But Greg monetized, yeah. But Greg actually really did take it to the next step and built a whole website called Pants Square, pantssquare.tv, and I'll bring it up as soon as the
pantssquare.me.
Pantssquare.me, yes.
Branding.
Let me see. Hold on just a sec. Let me bring this up.
And while he's doing that, I'll just point out for our European listeners that
yes.
He means trousers.
Yeah, trousers square.
Which was confusing for me.
That's why Drupal's localization
support. Because that's different.
Drupal's localization support is very important.
Yeah, pantssquare.me. So, like other square sites,
I believe there are four
of them. You can, check in and let it know perhaps where you are, or in this case, know what the status of your trousers are, whether or not you're wearing pants. And Greg actually built an entire mobile app, iPhone app, for Pants Square and demoed that and showed how it worked with the web services in Drupal. I found it to be inspiring. You can have a social network of people and find out their pants status, really.
When Greg was demoing the site, he goes and he logs into the site, and his response is, "Oh, I guess my pants are off." Waiting for him to step out from behind the podium and prove it.
The most important thing about this site is that I have as a conceptual decision, I decided not to implement any privacy restrictions because information about your pants wants to be free.
Yeah.
But I think the corollary is that information about your pants wants to be expensive too. Never mind.
No. Information about your pants wants to be expensive, and that's the marketing angle because we sell it to the Gap and stuff like that.
This is getting very meta.
Free your pants.
The Gap is removed.
Everyone, free pants.
I think the one other session that I thought was actually pretty interesting was Karen McGrain was talking about content strategy and adaptive, adaptive. Sort of philosophy that going into building your site, not even just at the design layer, but treating it as a problem that needs to be addressed in the underlying construction of how you approach what kind of content we store, how a content team needs to be able to approach things in order to be able to effectively leverage that, so that you don't just treat it as we've got our CMS, we've got our tools, we've got our content, and then we throw some insanely gifted designer at it and tell them to just magic their way into responsiveness. I thought it was really interesting, and at least for people who are thinking about, just building and architecting the Drupal side of things too, and aren't necessarily neck deep into the CSS, HTML5 stuff, understanding that they have an important role in really building responsive websites. That was really interesting.
Yeah, I heard a lot of people saying that they really enjoyed Karen McGrain's session. Yeah.
Well, and I think when you have a content management system that is so easy for people to kind of dump anything into that rich text editor that we expose to them. And if you're not planning for how that content can become something that is displayed in a responsive way, then all of a sudden it breaks all the other work that you do at the theming layer, or you know, in any other way, the approach that you're taking, because they've just dumped an enormous image in, or a big table, or you know, they've added something that won't scale, or it won't really fit. And so, you know, defining what content is and what you allow to go in there, and thinking about that strategy
but,
for.
But
it.
I have this file from Office. Can't I just copy and paste it in? I need all of that formatting.
I think the paste from Word function should actually just delete everything that you put in there.
Just, yes, your paste has been successful and there's just nothing.
Yeah,
I like that. Anybody else? Favorite bits and pieces? Conversations?
In typical conference mode for me, I spent a lot of time in what we colloquially call the hallway track. And that's in that I find the most value in these things a lot of time, and just hanging around outside the rooms and seeing who I run into. And it's really interesting here because a lot of Drupal conferences I go to, it's just a bunch of Drupal people, and we all sit around and talk about Drupal and redesign Drupal from scratch and complain about each other and stuff like that. But it was really interesting here talking to people who are like actually implementing Drupal in the real world and hearing how people are using it and the problems that they're encountering and getting into it and stuff like that. And, you know, it's a little grounding because we tend to get a little too kind of, you know, we spend a lot of time talking to each other, and it gets really inside baseball after a while. And so to hear, like, real world how people are doing and what they're struggling with is really useful.
Yeah, it was funny. You'd sit down at lunch, you know, and sort of say, oh, hi, I'm Jeff. What do you do? It's like, oh, I build Zappos.com. Like, oh.
My wife loves you.
Yeah. And then inevitably they'd say, here's my card. Email me and I'll give you a coupon. Like, oh, I'm glad I said hello.
I didn't get one of those. My wife is going to be sad. Hint, hint, if there's anyone from Zappos still here. Anyone?
Yeah.
Nice.
Your website's awesome.
Actually, yeah. I wanted to say something about Jen Simmons, because her track was not only incredibly informative, but the coolest thing that I saw, I think really one of the coolest things this week, was a young woman coming up to her afterwards, asking her to sign a sticker on her laptop because she had totally inspired her into getting into this in the first place.
Wow.
And I just think that to see that kind of sort of direct cause and effect of what some like great work that someone's doing, plus the way that she sort of projects to the community, and seeing that impact and you know, the influence that has was pretty awesome. That was great to see.
I've always thought, like, in open source, you know, as I watch the code that other people create and stuff, you know, it feels to me like my career in music, and you're seeing, like, really good music, you know, and I always felt like there should be more people, more rock stars, you know. And I mean, it's funny that we tend to refer to people like who are big in Drupal as rock stars, you know. But it's really kind of cool when you like people are appreciating programmers in the same way, in that sort of same way, like
and designers and writers and strategists.
Yeah, yeah, you
and
know,
project
I mean,
managers.
And what always I found in when I was playing music for a living was, you know, my goal was to sort of inspire other people in the same way that I had been inspired, and so to see people, you know, inspired by Drupal and that kind of work, or even just sort of web work in general, is exciting. Yeah. Joe, do you have any highlights from down that end of the table?
I still really want somebody to explain to me how Josh Clark was able to tweet at the same time that he was presenting. I was totally blown away by that.
Yeah, I know. Did everyone catch that? That Josh was live tweeting while he was speaking. So he would bring up a slide, and then, you know, here's a quote from Ethan Marcotte, and his Twitter feed would be, here's a quote from Ethan Marcotte. Like, what the?
And it would link, like, to the resource. And
yeah.
Like, oh,
it was an Apple.
For more information, follow my Twitter stream. Yeah. I asked him about that after a session, and he said there's a script. I should find it.
Yeah, we've got to find it, because he has this Apple script that is essentially tweeting show notes.
Yeah.
So, like, if he has, like, little presenter notes in there, and so when it would hit that slide, then it would automatically tweet it.
I think that was the original plan for what they were going to do with the QCAT.
What was that? I'm sorry, I was searching the internet.
You're showing our age.
Yeah, never mind. comments I make can be safely ignored. Just, you know.
Nifty Apple script allows embedded. I can't read so all the this idea and was moderate the podcast at the same time. OAuth apocalypse. Anyways, we're going to take questions from people, and we've said, you know, Drupal questions. I'm sure as you've been watching the conference, you have questions, things that you thought, oh, that's interesting, but wait, I need more information. We've both got people in the audience who know things and people up here who know things, so we'd be willing to take some questions. So anybody that has questions, just raise your hand. We've got Matt Cleave playing Phil Donahue in the audience here, running around with the wireless mic. Thanks, Matt.
Well, first, I want to lodge a formal complaint. There were no babies for me to hold this Do It With Drupal, and that's very disappointing to me. However, I still had a marvelous time, and I would like to know, when are you going to do it again?
Do It With Drupal. This happens every time this gets as it's like, oh, that was great. Do it again. I feel like this is also like the story of like 2-year-old, right? You know, you'd like make a funny face and do it again. You know, make a funny face, do it again. It's really getting painful. Do it again. You know. So if you go back and listen to the previous Do It With Drupal wrap up podcast, you will hear this exact same answer. Oh God, we will never do that again. But maybe next year. it's really a lot of work to put this on and extra pressure of doing it in the big city here in New York. But it was a lot of fun, wasn't it? Yeah. So we will see.
Yeah.
I think one in Providence might be kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah. We could probably kick Providence's ass.
A persistent theme is actually everyone always wants a conference to be in their hometown.
Right, yeah. Yes, but I have critical mass because Matt and Jeff both live there.
Yeah. Crafty, very crafty.
Yeah, if we did. But the nice thing, I mean, how many people here are local? Yeah, see? You don't get that in Providence. There's only like 18 people in Providence. But it's close to things, so that you can take the train right from here to there. Except in New York City, they're like, why would you ever need to leave? Well, anything good will come here.
You could get that in San Jose.
What's that?
You could get the same kind of crowd in San Jose.
Yeah. Oh.
You know where would be a really cool place to have one is Stockholm. Stockholm's really
Stockholm,
nice.
Stockholm, yeah. You could sleep in your own bed.
Yeah.
See,
yeah.
This is how it goes.
Greg, your thick Swedish accent is coming out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How about Honolulu?
Greg lives in Stockholm. Yeah.
And just as a pro tip, the time to ask somebody if they're going to run a conference again, the wrong time is on the last day of the conference. And all that they can think of is, thank God this is over.
Yes. Got another one here?
Long time listener, first time caller. Question for you guys. If you could identify one theme that you felt was sort of emergent at this conference, what would it be?
Theme that is emergent at the conference. I probably should be the last person to answer because I actually tried to come up with some concept of that before the conference. I'm curious to know if it came through.
Synchronicity.
That's Jungian synchronicity. Yeah. Yeah.
No, I mean I mean at least from the stuff that I was catching, it feels like. I mean, part of this is a deliberate choice about like what kinds of sessions we were going to try to get, and like the broad swath of different disciplines that we wanted to be here. But it really feels like over the past several years in like web development and web technology, there have been a lot of different little silos and pools of expertise growing up out of, you know, a decade or two of hard-won, you know, battles and painful lessons learned. And, you know, in like content strategy and, you know, design and even just deployment practices and figuring out how to get multiple websites for organizations working together and then realizing that that ends up playing into the same kinds of things that have to be done to make mobile and, you know, device adaptation work well. It really feels like we're starting to hit a phase where these little pockets of insight and research and learning are starting to grow together. So it's not just these, you know, oddball people in different areas talking about their particular point of passion. Now we're starting to get to the point where those different disciplines and those different emergent technologies are starting to be able to sort of, you know, the tracks are starting to meet and, you know, we're starting to almost hit that golden spike moment of, you know, the Transcontinental Railroad. They started in the east and west, and God help them if it was a couple of feet off when they met in the middle. But, you know, it feels like we're getting to that point with a lot of web technologies, and it's exciting that you don't necessarily have to be hardcore bleeding edge to start seeing the benefits.
Well, and I think there's that central notion of content that was talked about in a lot of the keynotes as the origin point for design, but there's also the notion of Drupal as the center point for that content to get out, whether it's to different devices or to different services. And I think that's a really sort of interesting parallel, where from a sort of a strategy and design perspective, you want to make sure that the content is the most important piece, and then everything else is built around that. And likewise, Drupal can be that centerpiece that connects disparate systems and can push that content back out to pretty much any device or way of accessing it that you want. That was kind of an interesting one for me.
I was going to say the same thing, the whole concept that everything should be content-centric design and engineering, and I made that point in my web services talk and stuff like that, is I think growing sentiment throughout this, and it really did seem to be a common theme in this. Yeah. Was that by design, Jeff Robbins?
Oh, everything that was good was by design. Everything not good was an anomaly and will never happen again. Yeah, I mean, certainly hearing, you know, getting some people sort of outside the Drupal community to come in and talk. Josh Clark gave a great keynote this morning. He's got such great energy. But, you know, hearing this idea of, you know, he's kind of from, in particular, the mobile world, and talking, you know, to people who are sort of leaders in the mobile space, and basically them coming to the conclusion that content is the important thing. Start with the content. And here we are in the content management world, and, you know, sort of trying to struggle with these same things ourselves, and realizing, you know, I've been saying for a while, it's like, why are there no good themes for Drupal? And it's not that there are no good themes, but it seems to be hard to find a theme that just works for every single site that you work on. And the answer to that is because there's all different kinds of content, and you really need to know what kind of content in order to create your design or even your whole website around it. And so I think it's a good solution for us in Drupal as well. Not to mention the fact that you're kind of lining up, synchronizing, if you will, with the mobile people. And
do they call that synergy?
I'm going to go with synchronicity.
Just because
that's
it's
the
a better
music
album.
Fan in you coming up.
Yeah, it's a better album. I think Synergy was a was that Emerson, Lake and Palmer, was it?
I think there's also when you make a new deck in PowerPoint, it actually comes with Synergy as the title automatically. So
good times. Any other questions? We'll take in questions about anything. Got one up here.
Today's mobile track has made me think more about what we're doing with distributions and how, you know, they're so website-centric as opposed to content-centric and getting your content out in lots of different ways onto lots of different platforms. And there's no reason they can't be adapted to accommodate more sort of mobile tools, but maybe we need to start thinking about that right up front and center. What do you guys think about that?
I think it's a reflection of the fact that right now Drupal is very website-centric. Drupal is not made to deliver anything but HTML websites from the ground up. I mean, we hack together all sorts of stuff to be able to deliver JSON and XML and blah, blah, blah. But it's all just hacked on top of Drupal. It's made to deliver websites, so it makes sense that the distributions are made to deliver websites. I think that as the Drupal 8 cycle goes forward and like things like Larry Garfield's initiative to build web services into core and stuff like that happen, then I think we'll see a lot more broad-ranging things like that. And like, I'm going to be releasing the PanSquare site and app, and so hopefully, and you know, just as a demo, but I would imagine that we will tend to see more things like that, like people releasing distributions, but also releasing the apps for the distributions and the mobile content for the distributions. So, like, you know, right now we have the COD distribution, right? So, for instance, they could easily ship a generic conference COD. The COD distribution, for anyone who doesn't know, is the conference organizing distribution. It's a distribution for Drupal that's centered around building conference websites. And so they could easily ship a demo Titanium app for that, and all you'd have to do is skin it and it would run, right? I think we'll see a lot more stuff like that, but I think that Drupal needs to get to the point where it supports that stuff a little better too.
Well, I think one of the things that was sort of an interesting conversation at DrupalCon in Chicago, I think, was the fact that Drupal automatically sort of by nature is this sort of web-centric thing that it pushes out, if you were to pull away from any structure being implied other than the structure of the data itself, and then the really handling, is it pushing out XML or HTML almost as a, you know, a rendering engine? So Drupal at its core, if it was really just pushing out the array of data that is this node that you want to put on the page, what that page is then becomes irrelevant. So if you have an HTML engine or an XML engine, then it would really give you a lot more flexibility and be, I think, more like what people are attracted to with something like Expression Engine, where you could have really finite control over the markup and really have only what you want in what you're building as a template or a theme. And I mean, I think that that's an interesting way forward, to be able to take what the output is and actually abstract that one step from the core of what Drupal does.
And that's actually what Larry is planning to do in his initiative, is to separate the rendering engine completely from Drupal. Because, I mean, right now it's ridiculous. If we want to return JSON in Drupal, we've got to boot the whole theme layer and print JSON and die to prevent it from printing HTML. And it's like, so he wants to turn all of that stuff and make all of these and basically make pluggable theme engines. And if all you want is JSON, then you just throw it together and spit it out and you're done. And if we can build that into Drupal at core and just be able to say node 1 and you get the page and you say node1.json and you get JSON, that's like the king. You're just basically turning Drupal into a gigantic REST server at that point. And I think that's going to be really awesome.
And I think that's what got people quite excited about Rails when that first came on the scene as well, just that we could go in and print out, well, not nodes, but whatever the equivalent was, just stick XML on the end, and there it is.
Yeah, it only has to do as much as you want it to do. And, well, I think that's actually, there's been so much talk about the content side of things. The distribution space in Drupal tends to lag. There's people building tools in Drupal to make stuff out of, and then there's people building sites and building solutions out of them. And the distribution space tends to be sort of like a third, like, phase in that life cycle. It's once people have actually built out sites and figured out what kind of decisions make sense in terms of how are we actually, what kind of content types, how do we want to divide those things up, what needs to be discrete fields that we need to track independently as units of metadata rather than just big blah of text or something like that. Those kinds of discrete decisions in breaking down a problem space, that's hard. That's where really, really hard work lies in a lot of these scenarios. It's not, it's really hard to add a field. It's what field should I add to make this make sense for a particular problem space? And I think we're in an era where the tool sets, you know, with Drupal 7 coming out and, you know, the third-party contrib space, you know, finally getting more mature on top of Drupal 7. Now people are in the solving problems with the tool, with the current set of tools phase, and I think what we're going to see is another interesting cycle of distributions growing out of that as the best approaches to some of those new problems are there. So, I mean, there is a lag there, but I think that's sort of a natural process.
Earl and Joe, what do you think?
I think that as Drupal moves more into this realm of not always serving content as HTML, it becomes more possible to serve it as like content, and you get to mark it up in different ways depending on what rendering engine you have in place, that then you don't really have to worry about, does this distribution support my web application or my mobile app? It's just like, you get to build the distribution that solves some problem, and then it hopefully will be able to serve your content out in any format that's necessary.
Yeah.
Hopefully things move in that direction, but at the moment, yeah, we've got a ways to go.
A long ways to go.
Yeah.
And ideally, the hard questions about, you know, how do we structure the underlying content and how do we, you know, make the underlying sort of mental model of how a problem gets solved, how do we make that make sense? That ideally is divorced from, are we spitting out HTML or not? You know, the idea is, even if we make it possible to spit out JSON, you have to make JSON of content that's intended for that kind of use. So those decisions are important. And then we can sort of build those additional layers on top of good decisions.
And on the other side of that, if we're splitting those two things out, that's even going to help us when we do want to just spit out HTML, because I'm sure we've been theming things before, and, oh, how do I override this bit of HTML?
And that's the biggest complaint that people have about Drupal and many other content management systems, is not having enough control over the markup. And it really seems like it would open the door to do a much better job.
Well, there's also this aspect of needing sort of critical mass in an open source community. You know, we need to have people understand why they would want that. And it was really interesting and exciting to see people like Josh Clark and others talking about mobile apps and kind of what it takes to, you know, to build that. And then you start trying to connect, like, okay, where are we with Drupal? You know, what steps need to be taken? And then, like, as a community, we need to sort of understand what are the pain points there and how can we make that better? But certainly, yeah, getting services into Drupal 8 would be amazing. I have up on the screen here Ryan, the website that Ryan Srama built using Drupal Commerce for his session. For people listening to the podcast, Ryan Srama built the Apple Store in Drupal, and it really came out amazing. Ryan, for us at the last Do It with Drupal, built Etsy and got a wonderful letter from Etsy's lawyers on the day that the conference started. So this is, he did an amazing job. You can select which, it's the Pineapple Store. I'm sorry, did I say something else?
No.
He built the Pineapple Store, which is nothing at all like this. And so we can buy a pie pad here. We can choose a white one, and look at this. It updates over here with the information. We can choose a Wi-Fi 64 gigabyte, and it updates the prices and stuff, and we can add that to our cart. It's amazing.
I didn't know I could get pies with Wi-Fi.
Pie is short for pineapple, but pineapple with Wi-Fi. You just take a Wi-Fi card and just jam it on in there.
Is that like related to like those, you know how people use like Pringles cans to extend
their
range?
Yeah, this is like that.
Is that like that? Do pineapples have some weird geometric
thing? Or using a potato to power a clock?
Yeah.
So it's the same idea. I think the pineapple has enough juice to power a Wi-Fi connection. Thank you. Thanks, everyone. Thanks for coming. Have a good night.
He's been here
all
week.
Is that not a good outline? Okay. And then another site, Joe, who's up here, built Drumblr. It says Tumblr here. I don't understand why it would say that, but it's for building social, interacting blog kind of things that are super easy.
Yeah. Very, very similar to another site, Tumblr.
Oh,
but the concept
really?
Is, you know, it makes it really easy to create a blog and put things on the internet, like Drupal putting stuff on the internet.
What was what particularly surprisingly easy or surprisingly difficult about building that site?
Dealing with the concept of subdomains, where you have a user that gets their own subdomain of Drumblr.us, so joe.drumblr.us, was actually really easy. I used the domain module in order to do that, which I hadn't used before, and was pleasantly surprised at how easy it was to just read the documentation and install it, and it actually worked, which was even more surprising. And then I made content, and the content went where I expected it to, which was even more surprising. So that was awesome. So there were some aspects of it that were more difficult, too. The website site that shall not be named that this is based off of has
the
a feature where you can actually click to follow a blog, so you can select, I'd like to follow this particular blog, and that was a little bit harder to replicate. I ended up making it so you could follow a user using the flag module, and that was really simple to do. And I wanted to potentially extend that so you could follow a blog, but you'd have to maybe write some code so that you could actually flag a domain instead of a user, for example.
But, Yeah, these fantasy sites are always a lot of fun, sort of interesting exercises to build, and I think they're really good learning exercises for people who are seeing them presented, because, you know, it's sort of like, okay, you know how the Apple Store works, you know, how would you build that kind of a thing?
That's awesome. You don't even have to come up with an idea. You just steal somebody else's idea and build it, and you learn all kinds of great things about Drupal.
Yeah, it makes it look like it's super fast and easy to build Drupal sites, which is cool. Yeah. I think actually, you know, my
borrow.
The hard part is kind of the UX and design stuff with Drupal, or the finishing touches, I guess.
Well, I think that's a theme that, like, every year when we do these fantasy sites, it keeps coming up. I mean, what comes together is, you know, as it turns out, if you know all of the decisions about what the right balance of functionality versus flexibility is, where things should be placed, that's the hard part. You can actually put those things together using Drupal or, you know, whatever, very, very quickly when the hard things have already been done. The decisions that don't even necessarily have anything to do with, you know, what module should I use, what theme should I use or whatever. And I think, again, that comes back to, you know, where a lot of the emphasis here has been getting speakers and getting, you know, sessions about a lot of those hard problem areas about content strategy and mobile strategy and managing your projects and figuring out how to, you know, get your company to the point where those difficult decisions about priorities for a product or a site have been made, so that you can just get to the "and now we'll build the darn thing" point. I mean, I think that's a really interesting theme that keeps coming up.
Well, you know, something else that I've recommended to people in the past that's kind of along these lines is that, you know, you have trying to replicate something that exists leads you down a path of going to find modules that will do certain things. And you can kind of flip that around, and if you just spend time every now and then browsing the contrib modules, they will start to kind of tickle your brain, and it will think of things that maybe you wouldn't have otherwise thought to include just because somebody made a module for that. And so just kind of paging through and seeing all the things that are there that are related to it, the next time you go to build a project, you might have this thing in the back of your head like, wow, you know, I could add this extra functionality to grab EXIF data out of something when they upload it. Or, I mean, there's all these little neat things that people have made these, like, kind of offbeat modules for that can add a real depth and richness to a project that you might not otherwise think about.
Yeah, like the Talk Like a Pirate module. One day a year, bam, whole site, pirate talk.
How much custom code did you have to write for your Tumblr code, Joe?
That's Drumblr.
Sorry.
To any lawyers who are listening to the podcast, Sally just said Drumblr.
Drumblr.
I wrote basically three custom modules for it. One of them was a text formatter, or like a formatter for text fields. One of them was a module that just basically added an additional field to the user registration form so that you can create your vanity domain when you register. And then one of them was just a bunch of form alters to remove stuff from the node add edit form to try to simplify it. And we got a little code here and there to glue things together and make it function. And then the custom theme, which was a lot of, I borrowed a lot of it from this really awesome design that I found. And converted most of the JavaScript from prototype to jQuery so that it would work with Drupal.
Well, I will say, like, having actually talked to you a few times while you were working on this project, I know there was an even cooler idea that you got. We were time boxed on, like, how much time to spend on these things, because we didn't want to turn into, hey, we were able to clone this site in four months of work. You know, it was like, we wanted to see what could be done in a relatively short sprint. And I know one of the features you were looking at was the ability to copy and paste themes from perhaps another website that works in a similar way and just have them be piped through the Drupal theming system automatically. And I won't lie, I'm eager to see if that ever sees the light of day.
Jeff Eaton, have you ever written this type of a system before yourself?
Actually, yeah.
Really?
The first theme I ever wrote for Drupal was it was designed to just coerce Drupal into outputting exactly the same HTML as movable type 3.0, so at the time movable type had just done a big theming and design contest, so there were like just tons, hundreds of these like elaborately awesome pure CSS based skins for movable type that you could get, but you had to have exactly the same markup as movable type. So it was way easier than learning how to do design to simply make Drupal output exactly the same HTML as movable type.
Typical programmer approach.
Exactly. I'm colorblind. I have an excuse.
One of the best designers I know is colorblind. No excuses.
Does anybody... okay, good. We're going to...
One of the things that was good to see here was when I'd been reading about the entity system in Drupal 7... And for many months, I would try to go to sleep by reading Drupal code and try to absorb some things. And I noticed there was this entity module to add some CRUD functionality to what was in D7. I'm like, why wasn't that in there? And then to see for the Pineapple Store, the goal was with the new version of Commerce was to make it take advantage of a lot of the D7 foundation, and he created entities, and the nodes were just things that referenced, like in the model view controller, it actually referenced entities as if they were the view, and then the stuff that was presentation dependent was handled by views, nodes, and all that other stuff. So that was a great example of what you guys have been talking about. It kind of pulled that together for me.
Yeah, the just watching Drupal Commerce in action, I hadn't really, you sort of hear about it and then it's kind of on you, in open source. Lots of times it's like, okay, so now it's available. I could download it and spend a weekend maybe testing it out and see what I could do with it. But it's a whole different thing to go to a session and say, it's like, I built this Pineapple Store, and here's how it worked. It's like, oh, okay, and starting to get those concepts of how he's using the entity system as in previous versions of Drupal, we got around that by creating nodes that weren't really nodes.
Well, yeah, and I think that's one of the big questions about entities in Drupal 7. Is anybody here familiar with entities?
Why don't you just explain it? Because there might be people listening on the podcast that would know.
Yeah,
yeah. If you're sitting at home listening, what an entity is.
Yeah. Take maybe 15 seconds.
Are you commuting? Raise your hand right now. Entities are thingies that store stuff.
nodes. Moving on. Exactly. It's like nodes, but not called nodes.
Well, no, I mean, there was a whole like phase of time in Drupal history where the idea was that because we were starting to accrue all this power and flexibility around nodes, the basic unit of content, and you could make different kinds of nodes for your site, like articles or events or whatever, slowly but surely, everybody just started making node types for everything. It's like, if I need to store a thing, I will make a node type for it.
The classic one was the profile as
user
a node.
Profile.
Right, user
yeah.
profile.
And the downside to that is that, well, there are other things that sort of need that kind of flexibility, like user accounts. It'd be nice to be able to add things like, say, what is my custom domain for the user account that I'm registering? Or, what's my homepage URL or something? Things that you want as a part of the user account, or say adding extra fields to comments in addition to just, nodes or whatever, that slowly but surely we started making node types to just for everything. So everything that existed in Drupal ended up having like this mirror node type that we really actually stored everything in. And what we now have in Drupal 7 are these things called entities. Nodes are a kind of entity. Users are a kind of entity. Comments, taxonomy terms, and in the Drupal Commerce project, products are a kind of entity. Because although you need a lot of the flexibility, like the ability to add new custom fields on or display it in different ways and stuff like that, a lot of things that nodes do, you don't actually need. Like, what's the publication date for a product. You know, I mean, you know, you could say, well, maybe we need to store a date for it, but it doesn't really have a lot of the same conceptual pieces of information as a piece of content. So the idea is now that, you know, those kinds of things become entities rather than just being jammed into the node system, and stuff like adding custom fields or different display forms or whatever, entities can do that. I'm actually proposing that we have a new meta object called the thingy. So the entity would be a thingy.
But it's a type of thingy?
Yeah, that's not really taking off yet.
A node is a type of entity, an entity is a type of thingy.
Drupalception.
Is that a sub-item of a whatchamacallit?
Yes, quite. Yeah. And a what's it.
Yeah, what's it.
Yeah.
Who's he mutts it?
And a hoobajoob. There's a hoobajoob in there.
The hoobajoob class. Very complicated. But yeah, no, I mean, that was way longer than 15 seconds. But, the, you know, that's sort of where entities fit in D7.
But in particular, you know, there's that explanation, right? And you hear that and you think, okay, I kind of get it. But until you really see a use case.
Like products.
Yeah, like, you know, where it's like, oh, okay. You know, it's all sort of theoretical and academic.
Oh, it's even theoretical after you see the use case.
Well,
I think some of the things that actually made it a lot clearer to me when I started looking at Drupal 7 was discovering that you can do these things like start to extend a user profile in a really useful way, or collect things in comments that allow you to add the fields that make the comments more useful, like somebody's Twitter handle or somebody's, you know, first and last name. And being able to extend any one of those things in a uniform, consistent way was incredibly helpful. And, you know, so comments are more useful. Taxonomies are more useful as an organizing structure for the site because you can add photos and other fields to make them a way to display groupings of things in a really sort of usable manner. So, I mean, I think that it's only getting better. But I think it's exactly that, seeing like how does this fit into my worldview of what I need to build, that's when you start to see the light bulb.
Well, the funny thing is, like, just wanting to add file uploads to comments so people could post a comment and attach a file to it was actually the first thing that I ever actually contributed any code in Drupal. It was a very...
Was that a thing or a thingy?
That was actually a what's it.
Oh. Does anybody in the audience want to, even aside from questions, just sort of share favorite sessions or moments or highlights from the conference?
We will just keep expressing opinions if you don't stop.
Otherwise,
us.
We're just going to keep talking.
I take that as an invitation.
How about you, Matt? Matt, what was your favorite moment from the conference? Phil?
On the spot, huh? I really enjoyed Nate's performance and scalability thing. It's something that a lot of people misunderstand, and Nate has a great way of explaining it and making it pretty clear exactly what you need to do to make sure that your Drupal site doesn't die a fiery death.
Yes, yes. It's hard to tell sometimes. You know, Drupal used to be sort of criticized for being bloated and slow, and PHP generally was you know, Rasmus Lerdorf, who is the creator of PHP, used to say, well, it's actually just an easy programming language, and so you get a lot of idiots who create bad code. He didn't word it that way because he's got some sort of a foreign accent. We've kind of figured out all these sort of like methodologies for scaling Drupal now, and so it feels more scalable. I mean, more, you know, faster, better.
Stronger.
You know, has it actually gotten faster? Or we just have better ways of coping.
A lot of his discussion was about the ways of coping. Quite honestly, you know, he covered the technologies involved to make things work better.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of the techniques for scaling Drupal at this point have moved beyond, like, did anybody have one of those really old PCs that actually had a button?
The turbo button.
The turbo button.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Those were the days. You could just say, you know what?
What is the turbo button?
I'm going to press the turbo button. I mean,
wasn't the turbo button really sort of the opposite? I mean, yes, you pressed it to make it faster, but, I mean, the whole purpose of the turbo button was that because when the computer started getting faster, there were like video games that were made before that had been that ran too fast on the new computers, and the turbo button was actually the purpose of it was to slow your machine down to make something
when it was off.
Nobody wants to press the suck button.
The molasses button.
Turbo button. See, too much.
I always wanted that button to have a whirring sound when you hit it. Just a,
like an engine spinning
up. It feel good because it didn't really do anything else. Yeah, exactly.
Didn't they have one of those in Knight Rider?
Ooh, yeah.
Maybe we should put a turbo button in Drupal.
Well, but this is the thing, though. I mean,
you could turn it off and say, "Well, that." And it really, what it does is it just makes your website slower when
it's not
pushed.
I think that's called the page caching.
I was going to be really mean, but I guess I won't.
Well, I mean, the turbo button thing. I mean, I think the idea behind that, other than everyone sharing anecdotes about playing old video games, which. Okay. Got to stay on topic. It feels like the community is starting to move beyond just trying to, like, you know, turn the fast knob on Drupal itself up. I mean, you know, to some extent, the more flexibility and the more power we want to build into it, we've accepted that the idea of scaling Drupal and making it fast isn't just a problem there. I mean, you know, there's always things we can do to make it more efficient and better, but like these techniques for improving Drupal, I mean, they're not, you know, go in and do this to Drupal. Okay. It's about learning how to scale out a server and how to bring in other tools that people in other parts of the, you know, open source development community have built that are in use across all different kinds of technologies and how they can leverage all that stuff together. It's a more than just Drupal kind of solution to those concerns.
Well, and it's nice to see. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, I forgot now.
See what you did, Jason?
I am a
It's not like you
person.
Can get one solution that's going to fit every single Drupal site either.
Yeah.
Well, but I think also because so many of these things are outside the realm of what is in Drupal, it's about the environment and the stack that it's in, having more hosting companies start to pay attention to things that are running on the LAMP stack and actually offer some of these enabling technologies like Memcache or APC as part of what they're offering is, then we've got those hooks to bring that into Drupal and actually get that performance out of it and in a more understandable way. I mean, it's one thing to be able to get, you know, Matt Westgate to come give a talk at your Drupal meetup about it, and that kind of helps everybody, but you know, it's quite another to actually not have to necessarily go and figure that stuff out on your own. Because that really just gets way beyond what I think a lot of people are equipped to deal with. I know it's way beyond me. I mean, I've managed to do step one of his process, and that did make a huge difference, just tuning MySQL. But there are so many of these other things that, you know, we need to help develop other resources that will kind of help everybody deal with these things. And so I know some of the hosting companies are doing that, and I think others are starting to consider it.
Question? Comment?
Question. I guess a little bit of a devil's advocate. But so Drupal's become a lot more powerful, certainly a lot more flexible. You know, granted the name of the conference, but is there something you shouldn't do it with Drupal? Or you shouldn't do with Drupal? Is there
Twitter?
Yeah.
That was last time.
Yeah. What we get kind of overzealous in the Drupal community, you know, like, I'm going to figure out how to have Drupal wake me up in the morning and make pancakes and coffee, you know, and I can program that in PHP. It's going to be great, you know. But what would you not do in Drupal? What's Drupal good for?
I actually have a good example of that. This wouldn't have any bearing on any client I happen to be working with right now, but
good
just
to know.
Theoretically, I see a lot of places where IT departments are getting Drupal implemented, and what they want to do is sort of, they don't understand Drupal or they don't want to understand Drupal, and so what they sort of want to do is pretend that Drupal is Symphony, and they kind of want to say, well, we're being made to take Drupal and you know do this and that with it. But what we really want to do is store all the data ourselves and program it all ourselves and use Drupal just as sort of our presentation layer. Oh, and to me, that's like using all of the worst parts of Drupal and none of the best parts. Because, the pure framework aspect of Drupal is definitely not, there's a lot of focus going on to it in Drupal 8, and I think there's going to be a lot of improvement, but over time, it's definitely not the strongest, and there's a lot of design debt there. And the templating part is just PHP with some magic naming for template files, basically, and pre-process hooks, and hook page alter now too. So
this other stuff
Earl might have some things quickly to add to that list, but yeah,
yeah. And so that's something I never ever understand at all, because I mean all of the great things about Drupal are the ways that it enmeshes all of your content together, and the way that you can work with views and you can work with panels and you can work with feeds and all of this stuff. And once you take that stuff away, you're just left with a system that doesn't make any sense anymore.
We've been seeing some interesting sort of like these hybrid uses of Drupal, sometimes in a good way, but sometimes also in a sort of a confused kind of like, well, how'd you end up with that? It's like, well, we're sort of mirroring the system that we used to have that was built with Java by, you know, people on six different continents, and it's like, but you're not like, you know, and so that stuff happens sometimes too, and sometimes it's sort of, you know, I've definitely gone into clients' offices and said, so, you know, what does Drupal do for you here other than just being able to say, we're using Drupal? There definitely are points where it's sort of like, you know, maybe PHP MyAdmin would be a better input solution than some of these kind of things. I think, with all joking aside, you know, Twitter, yeah, you probably is not good to build with Drupal. However, I mean, that being said, you also need to sort of ask, like, the nice thing about Drupal is that you can build that kind of thing really quickly, right? And so it might be nice to build, and Twitter built their first iteration with Ruby on Rails, and it was fine. It was fine for 6 months, almost a year, until Twitter had, 2 million users, 3 million users on it. It was their success that made that difficult, you know, and then they, now that they had 2 million, 3 million users, they could make, maybe go get someone to invest some money so that they could make it better. So, you know, even to say, oh, it's not good for Twitter isn't really quite the right thing. I mean, we've got a URL shortener at lb.cm that's built using Drupal. I wrote a whole bunch of code to try and sort of optimize Drupal's bootstrap to bootstrap as little of Drupal during a URL redirect as possible, because that needs to be quick. And also, you don't want to bootstrap all of Drupal for that. But honestly, you know, I mean, Drupal's kind of overkill for that kind of use. But it'd be nice maybe if you were adding it onto an existing site, and Drupal gives you a lot for free user information, and I could use views and all this kind of stuff. It's kind of fun and quick, but if that site all of a sudden became the new Bitly, like, we'd probably go in and rewrite it from scratch. So, you know, Drupal's an okay solution for what you can do quickly and on a budget, but sometimes you may get to a level where you're going to want to rethink it if you're bootstrapping all of Drupal for something as simple as a page redirect or a tweet.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing that I tend to fall back on is, you know, Drupal, for all of the crazy stuff that we can bolt onto it and all of the interesting things that we can do with it, at the end of the day, it's a system for serving up, well, at least for the time being, web pages, and letting multiple people in different roles log in and create and edit and look at stuff. If in some fashion the use case you're building doesn't involve pools of people in different roles logging in, you know, coming to a website and looking at stuff, logging into it, editing it, creating it, think hard about, you know, whether or not you should be building it in Drupal. That covers a lot of ground, but like, there's also a lot of things that actually people put on the web that don't fit in that category. And like with, you know, things like, you know, URL shorteners, if you already have a significant investment in building Drupal sites and or you have, you know, significant skill set with it, it can be interesting to do that as an adjunct. But like if you, what you were doing was saying, okay, we don't use Drupal yet, but we're going to be building a URL shortener. That's a different kind of question than, hey, we've got this Drupal site. It'd be really nice to put a URL shortener in it. You know, those are two very different kinds of things because the existing amount of experience and infrastructure that you've built up with a tool also affects how much sense it makes to use it for the next small problem. We have conversations with clients a lot that boil down to, so could Drupal do, you know, fill in that blank? And the answer is almost always, well, it's computers. They can do anything. You know, it's just...
they can make you toast.
How much do you want it to do that? And then we can look at what it would take. It's just, I think for a long time, a lot of us, for whatever reasons, whether because we were working with tool sets that were limited or, you know, we weren't in a position to really go all the way with what we wanted to do, we were used to the answer to a lot of those questions being no. No, you just can't do that. And now it's more like, well, how much time are you willing to put into it? And we have to start thinking about those kinds of, you know, trade-off questions rather than just saying, is it possible? Because there is always going to be someone in IRC who will say, yes, I would do that.
Do we have another question?
You said something about the foreign accent, and I thought that I have to say something. But my question actually, something that I think wasn't covered in this conference was about media and media in Drupal, how it's handled and media management in general. Do you think that Drupal is in some acceptable level in this regard?
Media management?
There are many definitions of acceptable.
But that has definitely been one of my biggest frustrations over the years with Drupal is how hard it is to actually have good enterprise asset management.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just not something that's really been done well. Although the media module seems to be going that way.
Yeah, there's a lot of work going into that.
I think with the new infrastructure for handling files in Drupal 7, we at least finally have the basic tools to be able to do it.
Yeah, files are one of those like, entities. You
know, things that were never possible before we can now do. Like, you can keep track of when a file is being used and where it's being used, which is crucial to good media management. Like, you don't want to put an image on your About page and on your Contact page and then delete it from the Contact page and have it also deleted from your About page and everywhere else that it's in use. Just basic things like that.
But to actually be able to do that if you need to is actually oftentimes in corporate use an absolute necessity. And that being able to know where an asset is used and control it from a licensing standpoint or all these other things are, you know, real deal breakers in a corporate environment if you can't do that. And so treating them as an entity that can have its own rules and then sort of identifying where it's in use.
Things like adding licensing and rights information to the file entity so that whenever an image gets posted, you could add licensing. Where do we have the rights to use this image on our site? And this is where it comes back to that question of, hooray, there's a new set of tools that can be used, and now we're in the people figuring out the right set of choices about what to build with that new set of capabilities to achieve good media management. That's a lot of where the media project is right now. They're ironing that stuff out, and I think a lot of good progress is definitely being made. But it's
I think for people who are interested in this or feeling like what Drupal has is subpar, to be able to get involved, go to the issue queue and download the code that exists already. And I think, you know, again, here again, it's that critical mass thing. It's just people understanding what the problem is that they're solving. What, you know, a lot of the stuff, you know, when I got into Drupal early on, there was all this feeling of like, why did they do it this way? You know, and then I kind of got involved and it's like, well, first of all, thinking of it as they is a problem, you know, because I need... as soon as I had an opinion about it, I needed to start to become part of the conversation. And then it was usually done that way because it was either quick or they weren't aware of the other options or something like that. But I think, you know, as a developer community, you know, for us to better understand, you know, what enterprise media management needs are, and then, you know, in the same way as I think we're learning about mobile and HTML5 and all that kind of stuff, and sort of what the needs are of that technology, you know, it's just some of the sort of I wouldn't necessarily say edge use case, but stuff that's not general use case, not on every single website, is stuff, you know, where it's like, I don't know, I've never built a website that's needed that, and then it becomes this sort of catch-22 because it's like, well, people aren't using Drupal for that problem because it doesn't solve that problem, so that problem hasn't gotten fixed, so people aren't using Drupal for that problem.
Well, I think the more we start to see Drupal creep into corporate website environments where it's not just a support site or, you know, an ancillary thing, but actually the core website for that corporation, that's when that need really comes up. When you have you know, large corporations that have, you know, large quantities of assets that they acquire, or they've licensed them, or the photographs and things that, you know, can only be used in certain ways, there hasn't been a push for it. So, you know, I think that actually, because you can now start to see Drupal being used in more of the Fortune 50 or Fortune 25 or whatever, that's where there will be some more pressure and maybe some more resources if we can, you know, get that sort of hooked in.
If they are, in fact, Fortune 25, they've got some money.
It's true. It's
give
true.
Give a developer some money and fix that problem. It's fixable. We could do anything. We can make pancakes.
Well, Earl, you were just saying, was there a new release of Media that had just...
They just had a really big sprint on Media Module a week or two ago. I got asked a few questions on it.
Earl, so, can you get up on the mic?
I thought I was.
You got such that's great voice. We want to hear you on the podcast.
Sorry. Well, you know, I got the mic over there and the mic over there. I kind of got the odd mic out. Oh, that's a good idea. So they just had a big sprint a couple of weeks ago, and I don't even know who they are off the top of my head.
But Dave Reed and Beck White and Robin Berry and Thomas Svensson.
Greg, can you get up on the mic?
Dave Reed and Beck White and Robin Berry and Thomas Svensson and Arthur Felsch and who else, Arthur? Jacob Singh and Bank Pound.
Alex.
Alex what?
We only know each other's IRC handles. This is just
which Alex?
Awesome.
Oh, right. Effulgencia.
Yes. Brunstein.
We only know each other's IRC handles.
Right, right. So I know a lot of good came out of that. I heard a lot of excitement coming from that crowd when it happened. So the infrastructure is there. The tools are starting to come up. Who knows how long it will take to truly mature into something that will do what you need. But the wind is blowing. That's going to happen.
Yeah, hey, we just got images in Core.
Yeah. Yeah, basically.
That was supposed to be funny.
It was a lot more sad.
Thanks, everyone.
Yeah. This is the dark humor podcast.
So we've got about 5 more minutes. Maybe we can start wrapping it up. If were there any other questions or comments or tearful moments anyone wanted to share? It's always good at the end to have the tearful moment, and then
one more up front here.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I would like to suggest something. At the end of at least 2 presentations, there were very good bibliographies. And that's a very valuable resource because we're going to be able to continue the exploration of the ideas that were exposed during the sessions. Now, following that line, I wonder whether it could be possible that all the speakers would not only share their own bibliography for us to continue learning and exploring, but also the set of tools that you guys use in the daily Drupal-centric development. For instance, today I learned about Unfuddle, for instance, Balsamic, for instance, and Harvest for controlling.
Yeah, that's always a good thing about coming to these conferences, is just kind of looking over people's shoulders and seeing what how they're solving.
Yes, I wonder whether in the same page where the presentations will be eventually shared, whether the speakers would be kind enough to share that kind of knowledge. And thank you very much.
Sure. Any tools kind of stuff you guys want to share, your secret? I have used about every single IDE, you know, over time. The latest one, I'm using Coda these days.
Yeah, that's what I've been using, too, for a while. That and the Less app.
Less app,
that
yeah.
has completely transformed the way that I do any kind of CSS development. It's just been remarkable.
I'm a big fan of ActiveState's Komodo IDE. I've been using it for a long time. Just, I mean, my background before I started working with Drupal was I was a .NET developer. So, you know, I lived, breathed, ate and wailed occasionally at Visual Studio.
Only occasionally?
I will give them this. That is one hell of a fine IDE, and they have really just swept bullets over making it a very, very smooth and really, really good experience for the developers who are using the Visual Studio IDE. And that was the hardest thing for me coming into open source development. It felt like I was just sort of swimming, trying to find something that gave me that sort of support during the day-to-day process of editing code. And Komodo is the closest I've gotten to that sort of that level of there's tools for this.
IDE standing for Integrated Development Environment, by the way.
Yeah. I really like Komodo because you install it and the debugger just works. Ooh. Like, none of this tinkering around and compiling your own debugger and all of this stuff. You just install it and like press the debug mm-hmm. button and you can start debugging your
form. Yeah, the debuggers
amazing.
Are, for anybody who's relatively new to Drupal or new to debuggers, it's a fascinating thing. I always thought it would be interesting to do a session here, which was just a walk through a page load. Right? You get to watch every line that comes up and you just one by one. I mean, it would take about an hour at least to just, you know, line by line see, okay, and here it's starting to load the theme and here it's starting to, you know, and here it's loading the node and stuff like that. But it
takes
you can
a lot longer than
do
an hour
that
now.
With an IDE with a debugger, in this case, Komodo. I've heard tales of people doing this with Eclipse, but and then it's like this mythical beast, the Eclipse working Drupal debugger, you know, because you go up to them and you're like, I heard you got it working, and they say, well, yeah, but I can't show you. I was at one time, and
I'd have to
it was
kill
a dark
you.
Night and a dark road in the rain, and I don't know. It came, and I tried to take a picture, and it just came out blurry. You know, like it's like, really? Did you really get it working? And I caught a fish, and it was this big, and yeah. So you never can quite tell, but Komodo works, which is nice.
I really hate IDEs. I despise them. I just use a text editor. I just use TextMate, and that's it. Even though it hasn't been updated since Christ was born, I still use it. I think it's the best. It's the best thing out there for editing.
That's actually all Coda is. It just has built-in FTP.
Yeah.
But it's just nice and simple because I swim in the shallow end of this stuff anyway. So.
A big thing that I got turned on to recently, if you do a lot of using the Git version control, is that there's a sort of Git mini shell. It's called Git SH, and it's really, really cool. Another tool that I use is iTerm. It's a replacement for the Apple OS X terminal, and it allows the big thing that it has is it has full screen, which you get in Lion now anyways, but before you never had full screen, but it also does split panes, and so like I'll typically have a 1200 pixel monitor attached to my laptop, and I'll full screen iTerm and I'll have like five panes open, and so there's always like one that's open with Git SH and one that's open to a MySQL client and one that's open to my development server and stuff like that, and I can just roll between
you're
them
hardcore,
and, you know,
man.
All of
you're
this
so
stuff.
Hardcore.
I really like working from the shell, so I use Vim a lot still.
You're even more hardcore than that guy.
But I was going to add that Drush is by far the biggest
Drush.
Time saver.
There was an
me,
excellent session
amazing.
On that too.
Yes, Andrew Berry did a really good introduction to Drush, and I learned a few things.
And even if you're scared of things like Drush, if you talk to Andrew Berry about it, he's so enthusiastic that he just makes you want to learn.
And the nice thing about it is because you can configure it with PHP, you don't have to go in and go, oh no, how do I do an if loop in Bash? Oh.
For the people who aren't like neck deep in development stuff, if you have a Mac, OmniGraffle and OmniOutliner are pretty much where my brain lives when I'm not in code, just for like putting together quick wireframes and illustrations and like bubble diagrams of this idea I need to wave at someone on a piece of paper and convince them it's accurate, and just quick and dirty outlining and, you know, putting together everything, you know, before presentations or organizing thoughts for how we need to tackle something before we end up developing it. OmniOutliner and OmniGraffle are two tools that I just I live in them.
Yeah, and actually, OmniGraffle also has a really cool iPad version, so that you can do a lot of stuff kind of on the go. And then, I mean, that's where I always start with like any kind of information architecture work.
Cool. Any last thoughts? Any wrap ups? Any bits and pieces?
I have to catch a plane.
You're going back to Stockholm?
No, actually, I'm going to two more Drupal events in the next 10 days.
There are a lot of Drupal events these days.
Which means I get to see him again in like 5 days.
That's right,
it's
in
exciting.
Like 5 days.
Right.
It's exciting. Well, I want to thank everybody for coming to the Do It With Drupal conference. We had a great time. It was good for me. Was it good for you? Earl Miles is giving away some books. Is that your book, Earl?
One copy of my book, which has been out for almost a year now, that's kind of weird, and a copy of Emma Jane Hogben's new book, which is either just out or just about to be out, Drupal User's Guide.
What methodology should we use for people who ask
maybe
questions?
What was your favorite
person who participated and asked a question?
Oh.
I know you love them all. You love them all.
I love all of our participants. Frank here in the front row.
Frank, which book would you like?
Yay.
Earl's book.
He's choosing Earl's book.
And
yeah.
your second favorite, the runner-up? We don't need to prioritize, but another favorite that you had that perhaps was also wonderful?
Certainly. The fine person there on the aisle who started off with the first question, I think.
Yes, to get us going.
She may not have a baby to hold, but she can hold a book.
Yes, hold
that's
that
right.
book.
She already got it.
That book is somebody's baby. You can give it to a friend. I'm sure a friend would appreciate this book. Thanks everybody for coming to Do It With Drupal, and we'll see you on the next podcast.
Yeah, I remember. So.
Thanks, man.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Nice to see you again.
Matt will figure something out.
Maybe I'll see you in Tokyo.
Maybe right. So. Okay, yes. Let me know when you're coming for a dance camp.
Yeah, I will.
I am?
What?
Okay.
That's a wire.
Oh,
that
camp? Okay, that's fine.
Huh?
I'm going to have like a dozen copies
no,
of
this
that camp.
No, this is wire.
I'm confused because for...